Bienvenidos. That's California for welcome to the August 31st edition of National Review's Radio Free California podcast. I'm Will Swaim, president of the California Policy Center. You can find my colleagues and me at californiapolicycenter.org. One of those colleagues is California Policy Center board member and podcast co-host. I'll get through this in a second. I just made this all up.
It's tough when I'm the first. This is my first time doing radio for you.
David Bahnsen is right here. He's an economist and author, the host of the Capital Record podcast, and of course, founder of the eponymous investment firm, the Bahnsen Group. Sorry about that, David.
Well, don't be sorry. I was all excited to hear about this new guy, but it sounds like it's me.
It is. Hey, before we get started, you're going to the USC game Saturday. I'll be there.
Yes, I am.
You're going to be in the good seats. I'll be fully exposed to a brutal, brutal sun. We're sitting under the peristyle, I think. Not best, but...
Yeah, so, you know, they built the tower the year before COVID. It was the first year that I had done this and bought kind of permanent seats up there, and they have a whole little club and everything. And so what I like to do is go to a game with you sometime when I'm not bringing one of my boys or whatever, because I think that having that air conditioning and the easier access to food and beverage and so forth, it would be pretty nice. But it doesn't really matter. I'm there to watch the game. But to Saturday, it's going to be 105. So, of course, in God's providence, it's a 3 o'clock in the afternoon kickoff. Mm-hmm. Like, who cares about a hot day when it's one of those 7 o'clock games? Which, right. I don't like the 7 o'clock games because they're past my bedtime.
Yes.
But a 3 o'clock game is as bad as it gets for L.A. Coliseum early September weather. Can I share a quick story real
quick?
Please. You know the hottest day in the history of Los Angeles?
I do not.
You share a lot of history on this podcast.
I would love to hear this one.
This was August 30th or 29th. It was the last Sunday of August of 1998. And yes, I said Sunday. It was a Sunday USC game in the Coliseum. And it was an 11:30 a.m. kickoff. And we played Purdue. And I remember all these details because it was four famous things at once. And I flew to London out of LAX straight after the game. But here is what it was. Drew Brees was in the Coliseum because he was the quarterback for Purdue. It was the first ever game coached by our brand new head coach at the time, Paul Hackett. It was the first ever game by the future Heisman Trophy winning quarterback from Orange County, California, Carson Palmer.
Wow.
And it was 121 degrees in the LA Memorial Coliseum.
Yeah.
And I sat there, and most people know I do not drink anymore, but back then I did. And I was sitting there thinking, okay, it's so hot, I'll have some cold beers, and I'm going to tell you right now, it's a bad idea.
It's a bad decision on a hot
But
day.
I watched band member after band member get carted off the field on a stretcher.
Yeah.
I mean, 121, that's like grown up. That's like now, okay, this is real.
And for those who don't know, USC's uniforms are not just as hot as other marching band uniforms. I'm talking about the band.
Yeah.
They've got like literal like helmets on their heads and breastplates, I recall.
And just all of the layers.
Yes.
Yeah.
A cape that is suitable for like mountaineering in the Alps or something, or the Dolomites. It's amazing. So when you say it's going to be 105 or 6 on Saturday, are you saying that's the field temperature or that's the ambient temperature in LA?
I think that's what they're saying the ambient temperature in LA will be, which would mean the field would be much hotter.
Yeah.
But of course, you know, they never know. What are they saying now? I'll look as we're talking.
Well, you know,
it's going to be brutal.
Yeah.
It's going to be brutal. Throughout the whole Southland. I mean, they're talking about Newport Beach being in the 90s.
Right.
So when Newport Beach is in the 90s, it's just going to be hellish.
Yeah.
They're showing 98 high in downtown LA. So maybe 105 would be on the field.
On the field. That makes sense. Yeah. And also, this is the 90th anniversary of the Memorial Coliseum, which was built for the 32 Olympics.
Yes, it was.
So big history celebration there and new coach. So for those of you who want to check out a football conversation, this is not a football conversation. This is really about history, climatological, as well as architectural.
That's right. And by the way, for those who ever read my Dividend Cafe, which is my weekly investment writing that we don't talk about a lot on this podcast,
we should.
This Friday, I'm doing something so special that Radio Free listeners are going to love. I am going through the history of USC football, how it applies to markets and the economy.
Oh my gosh, I cannot wait.
Yeah.
That's going to be awesome.
Yeah. By the way, we just had a lot of listeners turn off for two reasons. God, he's talking about that finance stuff again. I don't care about this. I listened to hear you talk about Kamala Harris.
Well, that's coming.
And now he talked about USC football. Oh, my God. I'm done with this. I'm so sick of these guys. I'm going to write them an email right now to tell them.
Well, they
and
say,
then listen again next week.
They say never, you know, we're not supposed to bury our lead, but we've done that. And I'll do it just a little more to say that the William F. Buckley Jr. Prize Dinner is an annual marquee event in the conservative movement created to honor the work of NR's founder, Bill Buckley. This year, the Institute honors the work of economist and friend of the show, Larry Kudlow, and Young Americans for Freedom. Conveniently, this year's event will be held right here in California at the Ronald Reagan Library in Simi Valley, which won't be hot, although it'll be September 29th. Pray for a change. Ticket information is available on the nrinstitute.org website. That's nrinstitute.org. Join us September 29th at the Reagan Library in Simi Valley for this joyous celebration of the principles and people we admire. We'll see you there. Hey, David, we've talked over the years now, since 2018, about the state of California's fight over bacon or just pork products in general.
Yeah.
The Biden administration, in a shocker, has come out against California, urging its Department of Justice to fight on the side of those red states, typically pork-producing states, that have said California's attempt to manage the livestock in their states is a violation of federal commerce law. And the Biden administration came out with a stunning letter that said, yeah, they side with the pork producers. California has no legitimate interest. Let me see if I can read this here. No legitimate interest in protecting the welfare of animals located outside its state. They said the hundreds of millions of dollars pork producers claim they'll have to spend to comply with California's law clearly outweigh the negligible in-state benefits to Californians. Even a blind pork product sometimes finds an acorn, David.
Refresh my memory then on the details as to, because initially with some headlines and subtitles, you know, and I'm a federalist to my core, I'm thinking, okay, is California fighting here for states' rights? But it sounds like the issue is California's trying to regulate something outside of California.
Yeah.
So this would be anti-federalist idea.
So this all starts in 2018 with Proposition 12 approved by 62% of California voters. And it had to do with the extent to which animals, livestock animals, particularly in this case pork, are raised in conditions that some people say are inhumane. So California, in order to fulfill compliance with the voters' wishes, it says, has been sending regulators, state of California regulators, ag business regulators, to other states to investigate farms that produce the pork that ends up on, you know, the plates of people all over the country and the world. So that's where the federal government says California's simply gone too far, that, you know, it is now deploying agents, its field agents, to other states, and that's a violation of the law. It can do anything it wants on this end of the border, but not on outside it. And that makes sense to me.
But if California, it's interesting, if California wanted to take some stand for some sort of a standard about animal treatment that was isolated to California, and the feds had a commerce restriction superseding California, I'd be on California's side.
That's right. Yes. Yes, you would.
And so there, this is the problem with two anti-federalists fighting each other. That they're neither one of them are coming from first principles. They just happen to have different pragmatic interests in an unprincipled fight on both sides.
That's right. And California could have handled this in a very different way, which is the way we used to do things when I was on the left, and that is we
produced a duel.
Yes, back in the 1790s when I was a young leftist.
Biden says that to me. Doesn't he say that to people? Like, I'll do more push-ups than you right now.
Does he really?
He said that to some. You can go YouTube it. Some guy was saying, like, are you up for the job? You know, your age? And he goes, I'll do more push-ups than you right now.
I hope.
And then
joking.
I was thinking, like, it's so petty and immature. And it's kind of funny this guy brought it up, but also probably inappropriate. And then I was thinking, I also don't think you can do more push-ups than this guy.
No, I don't think so.
But anyway, so how would we settle it back in?
We'd settle it back in the old days. Like when I was on the left, we produced a little booklet, not we, but an allied group produced a little booklet that you took with you to go shopping. So that before you picked, you know, Morton's salt off the shelf to go in your supermarket, you would check it out and find out that Morton Thiokol was a producer of like nuclear weapons components or something, and therefore you shouldn't buy their salt. It was voluntary, I'm saying. And California could have said to Californians, You know, in keeping with your wishes, we're not going to be able to regulate out-of-state farm groups, but we'll put up a list or something. And if you want to check that before you buy, I don't know, Smithfield bacon or something, and please, I'm not making up a story about Smithfield. I know nothing about them. It's just the name that popped into my brain. I could have said Oscar Mayer or anybody else. But anyway, if you want to buy this product, check the state of California or his website, and we'll tell you which, you know, ethical treatment of animals state you're buying your pork from. I'd be okay with that, I guess. I don't think it's a state's role. Let some, you know, let some PETA or some other ethical animals organization do that for us. But in any case, California's best ideas, and I put that in quotes, almost invariably are so unpersuasive to Californians and to Americans in general that we make them compulsory. We make them coercive. We don't have faith that the public will simply do the right thing. And that's like marbled through this entire podcast generally, and specifically this morning, we're recording Wednesday morning. It's just like, I'm just struck every time the left thinks they've got a great idea. And this is also, this is human behavior. We see this on the right as well. Get a great idea, and somebody shouts, there ought to be a law, and presto, there suddenly is. So Biden right on pork products. New poll out, Kamala Harris leads Gavin Newsom. I want to repeat this. Kamala Harris leads Gavin Newsom in Democratic presidential primary poll. Primary poll, I put the accent on the wrong syllable. It's an Echelon Insights poll. And David, that's a, I would say, a very, very fair polling agency. They are they lean conservative, I would say, but they are in the middle. And 538, you don't think so?
No, I think they're that's not the issue. They're a Please. Fair polling agency doing an unfair poll. You can't poll a race that doesn't exist.
Sure.
You can't poll the vice president of the United States nationally against a governor of one state. Like, there, in other words, I would be shocked if there was a poll done of a national for Democrats, because they can only poll Democrats for a Democratic alleged primary, that had Kamala Harris behind Gavin Newsom.
But other polls
have
showed
The approval rating shows Gavin Newsom far higher than Kamala Harris. So what it is it becomes not a poll, but a question of name recognition.
Yes, there is that problem. I'll just point out, there have been other national polls of Democrats that show that Newsom has higher favorabilities nationwide.
Higher favorabilities, but not polling, like, who would you vote for? Because they're not polling that, because they're not running against each other right now.
Here's a line from the story. See what you think. There's a survey of Democratic voters released earlier this month showed Newsom leading his California counterpart, that's Harris, by about 7 points. So there are polls of likely voters. Ask them, who would you vote for?
Yeah.
And then, as you point out, there's the name ID problem. We are still 2 years out, and that's part of the problem. I hate horse race stuff generally, you know, when it comes to politics and hypothesizing. But 2 years out, Newsom has just begun to play his hand. The public already kind of knows Kamala pretty well.
Okay, so let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Let's play a little game theory here.
Please.
Is there going to be a primary that has Gavin Newsom, Kamala Harris, and Joe Biden all vying for the Democratic nomination?
No.
Of course not. So then this presupposes Biden's out, that he has said, I can't run, or my doctor said I can't run, or he accidentally gets on a plane to the wrong country and runs for president there, like something, okay? So then what is the scenario in which Harris and Newsom are running against each other? It is essentially only can happen if there's a civil war in the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. And of course, at that point, it's a free-for-all. And will there be more than one identity politics candidate running?
Yes.
4, 5, 6?
Yeah.
Gavin Newsom would be running as the minority because he'll be the only white male that's legit. Now, you could say Pete Buttigieg,
right,
but he will not be running as a white male. He'll be running as a gay white male.
That's right.
Which is different in the sense of the demographic and the appeal and the unique value proposition.
Well, to your point, Bernie Sanders is not in the poll.
I guess Bernie is a white male too, but he's different.
He's a rare dude.
He's rare.
Yeah. But here's how the poll ranked people. It was, you know, Harris, 21% said they preferred Harris. That gives her a 7-point lead over Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg.
Yeah.
And then, to your point, Stacey Abrams is number 3. She has 7%.
Okay, but Stacey Abrams, she can't run unless she just got done losing her governor race, which it looks like she's going to. You think the Democratic Party's not going to throw this person out after she loses a governor's race twice? She's never won anything.
I don't know, man. They weren't bothered, but they're not bothered by Kamala. Or maybe they are.
Oh, I think they are.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't think they want her running. I think they were bothered. I think that they, with Kamala, they didn't have to have her actually run. She could just tag along.
Yes, you're right. And one of the themes that you have brought up, and I always want to credit you with this insight, is that Kamala has been, I would say, the target of a drip, drip, drip campaign.
The name on here that changes things, and I don't care what anyone says, would be AOC. Now, I don't think she's in a run, but I think that if you had a primary with Warren, she's cooked. Newsom, Kamala, Bernie, Buttigieg, all together, I think Gavin Newsom wipes the floor with that field. Because it's simply this. Kamala, everyone hates you. Liz Warren, you're old and you're awful. Bernie, you're socialist. And who is the other? Buttigieg, you're boring. And and then I am the only moderate person who's reasonable and can unite the country. Like the stuff we talked about last week that we did a lot of tongue-in-cheek on, but it's deadly serious. This is the lane this guy's going in.
Right.
It's a sight to behold, but it's politically powerful.
You know, I'm
but then you throw in AOC, and this is the only point I'm making. I mean, super contrarian. She's dumber than a rock. The country's not socialist. I'm not talking about her winning a general election. She would probably lose 49 states in a general. And the one state she'd win would not be New York, by the way.
Right.
But what I'm saying...
Wait. One state do you think she would win?
Oh, I don't know. Vermont?
Okay.
I don't know. Hawaii is pretty bad these days, isn't it? But in the Democratic primary, I just think that she's incredibly talented on Instagram. And she's young, attractive, and charismatic. Now, everything she says like nails on a chalkboard for me, but I don't have any reason to think she wouldn't go get those college students and the youthful vote. And we're only talking about the primary. And then you have a bunch of blah candidates. They're indistinguishable from one another in real life in terms of their vision that would offset each other. So AOC could pull a Trump. She could pull a Trump. Trump could never get more than 40%. But as long as Rubio and Kasich and Cruz and Jeb, and we know the story, split each other up, he was able to just kind of go in as clearly a differentiated product. AOC would be a differentiated product in that field.
Are you not hoping, even in a tiny corner of your heart, that Elizabeth Warren runs and your book receives a new audience?
Well, I would. I'm not hoping for it because then I'd have to kind of go write a new foreword and a new intro, and they'd have to kind of repackage it a bit. You know, like you'd have to update it, and then I think she'd go let me down again. You know, that was a lot of work I did in 4 weeks to write a 200-page book and have her campaign go from 64% to 11% in a week.
I say you let Newsom's press spokesperson write the foreword. They will be delighted to try to take her down and make him look more moderate. There
now,
you go.
Liz, look, if they reject Biden, they're rejecting this. And this is a huge problem for Trump that everyone knows, and they just don't want to say it, besides the million other problems Trump has. You can't take a general approach of, I don't think the country's saying, hey, look, next time we go for like a 79-year-old, I want to kind of see his push-ups. I think basically what the country's saying is, do we really only have 75-pluses? Is that honestly the whole field? All we got is Hillary, Trump, Liz Warren, Bernie, and Biden.
Yeah.
There's no one who's like the ripe young age of 68. I mean, 68, as far as I'm concerned, is just like, eat your oatmeal slow, if you know what I'm saying. And these people are 90, and they're running, and they're their entire field. Like, I'd probably vote for AOC, you know?
Just on heart, on heart
just
health.
To get someone who, like, their cell phone doesn't go off in church.
God. Oh, my Lord. Okay, so one more poll. Humor me. Here's the headline from Sacramento Bee. Voters like Newsom, even as many, think California is headed in the wrong direction. New poll says. This is a state poll by UC Berkeley's Institute of Government Studies. And it shows that 53% of registered California voters say that Governor Newsom is doing well. They approve of his job. That's modestly up from 48%. That's 5% since earlier this year.
Still far below the 64% in September.
Yeah, 64% in September 2020.
But where, there was no like March of 21?
No, that, they're not giving it to us. But in February, they have February of 2022.
When was French Laundry? That was like November or October. That was right after the 64%.
That's right. Yeah, that's probably when the recall started. You are correct.
The peak of his unpopularity would have been after the 64.
Yes.
And it was related to shutdowns.
Right. Yeah. People were pretty, it was almost like war footing. You know,
was right, though, man.
Yeah.
People just forget.
Yeah.
I remember 2 years ago when you imprisoned me. Not really. I remember not being happy, but no, it's all good now.
Yeah,
totally. I'm out now. My mask is off now. So, I mean, whatever you did a year ago, I don't care.
Well, I don't know what it's like for you, but again, I just remind listeners, I live near a major University of California campus here in Irvine, and I'll bet 70% of the kids shopping at my local grocery store wearing masks, which I guess is great for me, but
I don't believe you. I don't believe you.
Buddy, I'm telling you, I actually did a count the other day in the parking lot. Out of 34 people, I was one of four not wearing a mask. I did a quick count. 1, 2, 3, 4, up to 34, and three or four of us not wearing a mask. Anyway, this same poll that shows that Newsom's generally popular, I would say that 53% sucks, but this is where Newsom is. 53%, we are not a 53% Democrat state or moderate state. This is not a great rating. But despite that, as the Sacramento Bee puts it, favorable rating, most voters largely feel the state is heading in the wrong direction. 52% said the state's on the wrong track.
I just think 53% approving is an awful lot of ignorance about the state of the state fiscally and culturally and a lot of other things. But you add 10 to who's in a vote. If people say they approve of the job, there's 10% more they're going to vote yes.
Oh, yeah.
Trump never had more than like 40, 41, 42
right.
approval, but he got roughly half the country would
That's
vote
right.
in the end. And Newsom, to me, this says there's 60% of Californians that are still in that camp.
I think that's true. Having said that, polls can... never mind. Boring. I think, this is just fascinating because people do think the state's generally headed in the wrong direction. They generally like the job the governor's doing. In other words, we don't blame him. I used to think, and I don't
they
think
it used to be this undisciplined. Listeners can't see. I'm holding up a picture from the article. That's a picture of him just surrounded by white people.
That is, yeah.
They normally are pretty good at kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I love the sign that says Healthy Minds for California Kids. We'll get into what Healthy Minds looks like here in a moment for kids in California. I'm going to skip really diving into this one story here, David, about California homicides and violent crime rose in 2021. This is, as the story points out and as our listeners know, crime is a real subject which the left is trying to denigrate, although I read this morning that Joe Biden is now going to start to refer to red state governors as soft on crime because of guns.
Well, they've been doing that, and that's sort of their shtick right now. But it was funny. I read a whole little inside bulletin. It's gun violence instead of crime. It's never again saying defund the police. And so he's got a whole messaging strategy. Mm-hmm. It's well-constructed. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. deceitful, but that's politics. But yeah, they want to make Republicans to be responsible for gun violence.
Right.
And Jonah pointed out like a speech that Al Sharpton gave where he gave away the cards in one sentence when he said, police are killing people and we have got to do something about gun violence. And so when it's the black on black crime in Chicago, it's gun violence,
right?
Not someone doing an act of evil.
Right.
Hostility
it's
or crime.
Yeah.
And then when the police do it, it's police crime. And so depending on who the actor is the phraseology.
Determines crime or violence. Yeah.
Right. But I think that the other piece that I totally disagree with the Biden administration on politically is they're going to say that Republicans are soft on crime because of gun violence and they're giving NRA and all that gun stuff. And then because of January 6th. And then because of Mar-a-Lago, and like, look at all the Republicans bashing on the FBI. Now, look, I happen to believe the Mar-a-Lago thing is a huge political loser for the right,
mm-hmm.
but for a different reason.
Yeah.
I don't think it's because, oh, we really got to come in here and defend the FBI. I think the FBI is reasonably unpopular around, or people don't feel strongly. I don't happen to want to bash the whole institution, but I think reasonable people agree there's some significant problems in the FBI, and the DOJ has been politicized in a lot of ways. It's a loser for Republicans because we're talking about Trump. Any second you're talking about Trump and not about Biden and the economy is just utterly foolish.
Yeah,
and the people doing it want to lose. They're that dumb.
I think you're right. I think they don't care because this is not a judgment on Trump himself. It is a look at the data. Talk about Trump, Republicans lose. That's just a simple scientific data point. You talk about that and Democrats and moderate Republicans vote against him.
But Ben Shapiro tweeted the other day. Democrats say, oh, we can't talk about Biden. Let's talk about Trump. And Republicans say, okay.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you this. The gun violence thing is typical spin. It's political, you know. I'm sure it was focus grouped and all the things. But this idea about January 6th, which most Americans intuitively believe was just this atrocious moment and it was absolutely criminal behavior. But the idea that's like, hey, there were huge shootings this weekend in Chicago. And they're right. Yeah, of course. The Republicans had some QAnon people there 2 years
that's
ago
right.
doing some stuff at Capitol Hill.
Right.
Nobody's connecting the dots of crime in big cities to January 6th.
Not to January 6th, but certainly to systemic violence, systemic racism, inequity. That's the California argument. You read about these crime stats and what you
find. No, but I don't think that people, independents, see, that's partisan what you're saying.
Yes.
I think independents, moderates, and the so-called, just, I hate the cliches of it, but that kind of, you know, soccer mom person downtown in a city, I don't think she goes, you know what, the reason we have this crime and I can't walk my kids down the street is because of 1619. I don't think that they rate it to some ideological propaganda. I think for the most part, those who want to be more thoughtful know that we have this repeat crime because we are letting criminals out of jail.
And just consider this story an hors d'oeuvre, David. This is from Eric Ting, who I have really become rabid about. I love to read this guy's stuff. He's with SFGate. That, again, is the website that's aligned with, associated with, financially owned by the same people who own the San Francisco Chronicle. But it's got a much more kind of libertarian, I think, neutral take on things. The headline is Aaron Rodgers trashes Gavin Newsom on Joe Rogan podcast. And it's not a huge story because I don't take my talking points from athletes on just about anything except maybe sports. Aaron Rodgers is a great quarterback, but he's an absolutely unreliable narrator. This is the guy who got himself in deep water because he tried to sort of suggest that he'd been vaccinated when he hadn't, and that wasn't the most courageous moment for him.
Did he?
He did. He seemed
he
to imply that he
was immunized.
He said yes, but he indicated
that I thought he was doing a play on that he had natural immunity and that was just as good as vaccine.
He did not make it explicit. It was clear to me that he would not come out and simply say, you know what, I'm not for vaccines. I don't know enough about them. I'm worried. He could have been a courageous guy about it, but he tried to weasel around it, I think. He's much more courageous on the field than he is in front of a microphone, which is what I expect from my jocks. But he's also, you know, he's also the guy who came
in
out.
In hindsight, do you admit he was right?
Oh, sure.
He had more immunity than
100%. I admitted at the time he was right.
You're just saying he should have been more bold about it.
Yeah, if he's really the bold truth teller, and he's just
I don't know, if he's really the bold truth teller we thought he was when he threw that long pass.
Yeah, really.
He's a quarterback,
but he also came out with big messages about how great.
Oh, I want to apologize for talking about football again.
Yeah, again.
Shut up and dribble.
And Will's over here literally dribbling. But he's also the guy who, during the BLM protest, came out with loads of messages about how great BLM is and that he was a big supporter. Barack Obama.
You want the support of your offensive line.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe that's all it is.
No, you know what's funny? Like, there's a sense in which I could be kind of inappropriate about this, and I don't mean it that way. Locker room. It's a serious thing. There's a kind of social component to that.
That's a great point. And, you know, this is what we find, for example, in our work at CPC with public unions. With government unions, we find cops and firefighters who live together, travel together in little squad cars. They depend upon one another to have one another's back in really tense situations. They don't work in isolation or in vapid, anonymous, anodyne DMV offices. They work in intense sort of ops.
But there's also the concept of wisdom and the concept, you know, the Apostle Paul talks about things being foolishness to the Greeks. If this is a ridiculous hypothetical. But if I was Greg Bahnsen's son and a reader of Bill Buckley for 50 years and a movement conservative and was transported into an NFL locker room where I just happened to have Aaron Rodgers' ability, but just weirdly was not in the social construct of most NFL players, but happened to be a sort of ideologue, and then BLM happened, would I speak about BLM in the locker room? With a sarcasm and disdain and scorn, I wouldn't. I would not pretend to support it.
Right.
But I would want to use the platform to kind of like develop some connection and friendship and honest conversation. But like I am a little sympathetic to guys like Rodgers on BLM is all.
Okay, that's fair enough. I was more offended by Aaron's, and this has nothing to do with California.
Why don't you just say what we're thinking? He lost to USC in 2004.
There you go.
He had the ball on the 13-yard line, four downs, and he couldn't get it.
I'll say this. He's a NorCal guy. He's a Californian, so that gives us the right to talk about this. Joe Rogan was a California guy.
That's true.
But I'll also say this. When Aaron Rodgers came out, this is before you and I knew each other, in 2015, after the Charlie Hebdo massacre, remember that in Paris? 2015, bunch of Muslim extremists come into Paris and gun down the journalists, you know, the artists at a French political satire magazine, Charlie Hebdo. And Aaron Rodgers comes out and says, hey, let's not let this get into like Islamophobia.
Did he?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I just felt like, you know, there are a bunch of dead people bleeding out. Now is not the moment maybe to worry that somebody's going to say a bad thing.
I would have put what he said in quotes, let's not let this get into Islamophobia, end quote, said none of the dead people. It's saying none of the dead people's family today.
Yeah.
But that's a standard thing, too. I remember Ben Affleck was on Bill Maher after one of these big things, and Affleck just wouldn't let down. Bill Maher's always been really strong on this point, you know, as a liberal lefty, but he's always said, like, you guys are just in denial about Islamic jihadism. And Affleck's like, nope, it has nothing to do with it.
Oh, my Lord.
It's just complete, like, yeah, there's just crazy people, and I refuse to even, like, all you're doing is fanning the flames of hate. And so, okay, I'm interrupting you so many times. Aaron Rodgers is not a political genius. He's on Joe Rogan. They're waxing and waning. I assume there's some funny things, and they're kind of edgy, and they're wearing their T-shirts and looking all cool and stuff. And then what? What was
it? That's really it. I mean, he ragged on Gavin Newsom and said, you know, people should vote for Republicans. Oh, Joe Rogan said people should vote for Republicans. And Aaron Rodgers said, like, nothing. He just kind of, like, was mum on that point, like, trying to stay out of, I think, formal politics, which is great. He was in his lane at that point. But that was it. Just hearing, you know.
But it does seem like he's kind of at least common. COVID was... It became so partisan, but there were those people that, like, a BLM supporting, afraid of Islamophobia person could still say, like, oh, they're arresting people for paddleboarding with coat. Like,
yes.
So he still had at least the sense to be like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, he's a very common sense guy who seems to have picked up some of the local color. And by that, I mean, you know, playing in Green Bay, a kind of reddish area of a purpley state with it's mostly conservative. I think that's, you know, he's a common sense Midwestern guy in some respects.
Who is really one of the most impressive quarterbacks I've ever seen until playoffs.
Yeah? Is he really bad in the playoffs? I don't follow.
Well, look, he won one Super Bowl, but I think he's had 7 first-round losses.
Wow.
They've been upset so many years against inferior teams. It's definitely a rep now, and it's a deserved one. But the guy's a great quarterback. He just, the 2004 game in the Coliseum was one of the greatest moments of my life.
So let's consider that all these things we've talked about so far are just the hors d'oeuvres. Here's the main courses or main entrees that we will offer you. This week, we had California state regulators at CARB, the California Air Resources Board. Again, regulators now put a deadline on the sale of new gas-powered cars in California. That's 2035. So that's 13 years from now. Californians will not be able to buy new gas-powered cars. So notice the stipulation in there, new. You can still drive your gas-powered car. You can still buy gasoline, we hope. That may change, too. This is California. But all new cars for sale in California by 2035 must be powered alternatively, maybe by your own sense of self-satisfaction and superiority.
So what's your prediction? Will it happen?
Yeah, my prediction is it will happen, but this is...
My prediction is it will not.
Oh, tell me, because I think this is like one of Stalin's five-year plans, that it will happen in a way that is ostensibly meeting the demand, the goal of a shutdown on this stuff. But just like, again, there's so much here. Part of this is that it reminds me of Stalin's five-year plans. You know, yeah, we will build 100 million new housing units, and, you know, then you find out that they don't, but they still say they did. Yeah. That's Newsom. That's Newsom with virtually every policy failure is just say you did. The left hates Trump for, you know, making stuff up and pulling it out of his keister, but Gavin Newsom's really handy around the nether regions at pulling things out of orifices. I'm sorry I said that, children in the backseat of your parents' car. But what I mean by that is just that he'll declare, you know, people like Newsom. Newsom doesn't really care what happens. I don't think he cares what happens in 2025. What he needs right now is stuff that will signal to the rest of the country that he's aggressive on climate change, but he's also a moderate, that he's for transgender rights, but he doesn't want to rock the boat on, you know, traditional families in the Midwest or whatever. Stalin's five-year plan. But also what's linked to this, and I want to get back to your point, David, about why you think it won't happen. What's interesting to me is the kind of like Schlieffen plan here, and the Friends of History podcast will know what I'm talking about there, or just those who know World War One. This is really California's move to declare new gas-powered vehicles prohibited is linked in other states. It is the trigger by which other states will, in fact, carry out the same or very similar prohibitions.
Yeah.
So every other state is looking at California and saying, literally, like in their law, if California prohibits gas-powered vehicles for sale, then we will too. And we're talking about a significant number of blue states that have lined up with California on this.
Well, and I don't want to be optimistic if there's some reason not to be. I'm not saying like that they're not serious. I'm saying it's impossible to gauge public pushback when they are pushing something out 13 years. And so, like, let's say they were saying it for 2025.
Right.
Do you think the public would put up with it where we are now in 2 years plus 4 months? Of course not, right? And so anything can sound acceptable in 13 years because people are rating it on the basis of a total disconnection from its reality and potential downside. But, I mean, are we still going to have a couple million used cars that are fully paid for, that low-income people own and depend on, and that they're going to have to replace? And what is the expense of both purchasing and maintaining an electric product by then? We don't know. And I do know this. Politicians won't be able to do it if there's public backlash.
Right.
There's just no backlash for something. Well, like, what if I said, like, in 2090, we're not going to have the McRib anymore?
Hmm.
Like, if it was 2022, I'd go to war over that issue. But 2090, I'd just be like, okay, we got time to kind of...
Hey, got time to work.
We can figure this out.
Yeah, probably we'll get ribs. But the first image that popped into my mind are these just absolutely cool, frozen in amber kinds of 1940s and 50s cars you can still see on the streets of Havana. Because, you know, there's an embargo. So everybody has to just sort of make do with the cars they had when the sanctions hit. And I can imagine Californians doing that, resorting to a kind of, Cuban car culture, preserving the cars they've got, A, because they're cheaper, B, because they work better, and C, because the environmentalists now have 13 years to gear up and kill the electric car industry, and they will. Like, I keep predicting this. I give it 5 years before environmentalists jump in all over the electric car industry and start realizing these things are not clean. Most of the products that go into making a car, an electric vehicle, are still petroleum-based plastic products. That's what makes them light enough to be able to be driven by a battery. The batteries themselves are highly toxic. I talk about this all the time, so pardon me, dear listener. I'm just going to point out that, you know, we've got, here's another story here, David, that I wanted to throw in along with this, you know, call this the car club section of our podcast, and we won't be talking about football. Here's the headline: GM shakes up lithium industry with California geothermal project. We've talked before about the fact that Gavin Newsom's entire vision, his Stalinist five-year plan, is that we're going to have a bunch of electric cars, and we'll have the electricity to run them on, and we'll have the lithium to produce the batteries and the cobalt. Well, cobalt is mined in slave societies today. It's Central Africa and China. It is one of the worst, most toxic jobs, and it really exploits young people, especially in Central Africa, where literal slaves dig this stuff out of mines for authoritarian governments and military dictatorships. So Gavin Newsom wants to rely on lithium. There is an abundant mining opportunity for lithium in the Salton Sea in Imperial County. We've talked about this before. My prediction is within 5 years, we've got environmentalists, Native American groups protesting the heck out of this. This is supposed to be sacred to Native Americans. Their sense of the sacred, I think, is for sale. I'm just going to say about these Native American tribes, they are typically really cool with vile things as long as they have control over it. It is rarely an issue of principle at the top level.
Like gambling.
And the sale of alcohol on, you know, Native American tribal lands.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, let's do that. and this is not a racist stereotype. This is Native Americans saying that it was, you know, white people from Europe who brought us alcohol, smallpox, and gambling. And, you know, these are just the political leaders of these tribes will, I think, be pushed by some of their more activist members to oppose mining on tribal lands. You'll have environmentalists out there camping out and blocking the massive, I mean, these are massive operations, and they are an awful lot like fracking. They pull lithium along with brine, that is a salt water mixture at the Salton Sea. They pull that out from like 8,000 feet below the surface of the earth. It's superheated stuff. And then they separate the lithium-carrying minerals there and then process those on site or in a separate facility, but they still have to be trucked around. And then they pump the brine back into the groundwater after having been chemically separated at the surface so that they can pressure, just like in fracking, pressure the remaining lithium back up to the surface again. And they do this cyclically. So there are all kinds of opportunities here for bad things to happen. And I'm not saying I'm opposed to batteries. I'm not saying I'm opposed to electric vehicles, not opposed to the use of lithium. I'm just saying it's BS when the governor and his ilk talk about quote unquote clean energy. There is no clean energy. Clean energy is like clean food. There is always a tragedy. And I mean that in the Greek sense. Somebody suffers. There is, I think, David, you might say, there is no free lunch. There's no free energy. Energy costs somebody something somewhere. There is no perpetual motion machine. This stuff is toxic. I just had to get rid of my iPhone over the weekend, and I asked them, can I just replace the battery? And they said, yeah, for like, you know, $600. Well, the price of the new phone was $600. What are you going to do with the old battery? I said, yeah, we throw it in this box over here, and then somebody separates it. And I said, who? And the guy said, yeah, I don't really know. So this stuff, this is toxic stuff we're playing with here.
Absolutely.
And we talk about nuclear as if it's, you know, it's off limits, can't do it because it's toxic. Gasoline, oil, forget it. Those things are toxic. Clean energy does not exist. Anyway, end of lecture. That's my Salton Sea thing. It's like a mining land rush, a gold rush down there right now. And major automobile manufacturers are rushing into the Salton Sea to try to get their bit of the lithium so that they can rely on it. If you don't do it that way, then you're importing it from China. I thought this was a fascinating story, David. A federal judge says that Tesla cannot stop its employees from wearing union labels. It says here union swag in the headline. I'm sorry, this is a labor board. This is the National NLRB. I'm sorry, it's not a judge. Wrong story. National Labor Relations Board said Tesla's current dress code policy is unlawful, specifically the part where it only allows employees to wear Tesla or other pre-approved black T-shirts. That policy meant that union swag was not allowed, a hindrance to anyone trying to organize or show solidarity. The NLRB rejected Tesla's argument that it has a right to control the messaging in its workplace. So I want to know from the folks who support this overturning of Tesla's ban on, you know, certain kinds of on Tesla's uniform policy. I want to know from them, is it cool if I go in there with an F Joe Biden or F Brandon or whatever? Or
no, it's not F Brandon, is it?
What is it? What is it again?
I don't. Let's
know.
Go Brandon.
Let's go Brandon. Thank you.
So or you're for Brandon. Why would you F Brandon?
Yeah, I'm sorry. You're right.
Let's go Brandon.
Let's go Brandon. Sorry about that. But, you know, you get my point. I think, you know, could I go in with my favorite punk rock shirt that, you know, or my favorite rapper's quote from a song involving, I don't know, you know, killing cops or raping people, making people pregnant? I think an employer kind of has a right to say, no, we don't want to get into that business of having our employees wear dueling T-shirts.
Of course. They do. Of course they do. This is so stupid.
I agree. I'm sorry I brought it up.
No, I just can't. I'm sorry it's happening. But how do you get stories from TheVerge.com? I'm curious.
Because it was the funniest one to me in terms of its grammatical errors. I mean, it's you could find it elsewhere with more depth, but The Verge is just this kind of lefty, cool digital site, and their grammatical errors make me laugh, and also their failure to understand anything like, what does this really portend for things that I don't want to see on a T-shirt? Again, this is the problem of lacking principle. The bill that I've been focusing on an awful lot here, David, and you'll pardon me for talking about it, but it's now on the governor's desk. That's AB 257. That's the bill that proposes, and this is where I was talking earlier in the show just a moment ago about how California is so convinced of its righteousness that when people won't voluntarily do a thing that state regulators want or state officials like or some small group of environmentalists demand or whatever, or unions really want, they simply make it a law that you're going to have to do this. So sectoral bargaining is AB 257, and it requires that some franchise fast food restaurants be represented by a 13-person commission appointed by state lawmakers, one by the governor and a bunch of others. I think it's 12 others by state assembly and Senate leaders. Since those state leaders are supported by government unions, these will be very pro-union sorts of people, and that's who's backing 257. So
I'm so excited to talk.
Go ahead, please.
We'll finish the explanation.
Okay, well, the explanation is simply that 257 is fascinating because it was opposed by the state's own finance department. I think I sent you the memo here, but it says...
So it happens when you have a moderate governor.
Yeah, moderate governor.
A kind of a purple state situation.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we've got a Department of Finance analysis of AB 257 by a chap named Chris Holden, and the Department of Finance's position on AB 257 is they oppose it. And they oppose it primarily for a really interesting reason, that this bill will require so much intense regulation, such a demand on the service.
So much cost
to enforce that it will be unenforceable.
Can you imagine if a government bureau opposed every bill? Well, they say, we oppose it because it creates significant ongoing cost. I'm sorry, is that a new criteria for you? And what else they say? It could lead to fragmented regulatory legal environment. No shit, Sherlock. The bill will not accomplish its goals, and it could delay enforcement and could exacerbate delays. Like, I can write this stuff accurately about almost
every
single thing in government.
That's right.
And this is the one that they oppose. Now, they're totally right to oppose it, and I think that there is Newsom cleverness behind this opposition. But I want to say something to my Republican friends that have taken on the mantra about being opposed to the deep state when they're playing it a little more conspiratorial and the administrative state when they're sounding a little more intellectual. Both things that I believe exist, and if they're properly defined, and both things I vehemently oppose. But if you believe the deep state is this thing where there are people in intelligence that are working against Trump, and that's what you think the deep state is, and that's why you oppose it, I would suggest to you, you're making a major mistake, not only politically and pragmatically, but philosophically. If you want to know what the deep state is, it is the fact that the people want a fast food sector council within the Department of Industrial Relations, which would go to establish other fast food sector councils to make recommendations for local standards. Here's the standard. And then, by the way, this would involve integration with the Division of Occupational Safety and Health, the Division of Labor Standards and Enforcement. There's a board that administers appeals on these things. And then there's a Labor and Workforce Development Agency. What the hell are we talking about? For fast food?
Yeah.
There's only one thing I want to know. Is McDonald's bringing the McRib back or not? That's it. I just named five agencies under with each other and this and that for people to order fries?
Yeah.
That's deep state.
Yes.
That's what you should oppose. If you are a Madisonian, Hamiltonian, Republican of any sort, stop it with this conspiratorial stuff and get to what we know is the case. That they can't even let an Uber driver or a fast food franchise function with freedom anymore. That's what I would die for, is to stop that. That's the issue at hand.
I got like nothing more to say.
I'm right about this one.
You are 100% right.
And that has nothing to do with me defending them raiding Trump's home or the Russiagate thing. I think we both were against all of it. And there was absolutely bad, nefarious, ideologically, politically motivated actors there. But this conspiratorial thing, first of all, it's usually not true. Because usually it doesn't need to be conspiracy. You just have a bad actor who gets away with something. And then you have another bad actor who might kind of cover it up. But there, look, Brennan and Comey and all these guys are just complete ne'er-do-wells. Like, I have no use for any of them. But this is stuff that affects everybody.
Yes.
Every single person. And it's entrenched in society from the, like, everybody says, you know what, we need a new agency, a new committee,
a new law.
It's got to stop.
And it really affects the people it pretends to defend, that is, the working people. Because what's going to happen next, the utterly, absolutely certain outcome of this, is that you're going to walk into your local fast food franchise, and there won't be counter service. There'll be a little kiosk, you'll press a button, bunch of buttons, and bingo, your fries will pop out. There'll be people you don't really interact with. But there won't be a sit-down place because we can't afford the cleaning crew. There won't be bathrooms. We will be in a situation where jobs are killed, number one, where prices go up. And that doesn't hurt you and your McRib. But for the folks who live in, I don't know, you know, inner city, they're working class people anywhere in the state and just need a relatively inexpensive meal, forget it. This will add cost to that.
It adds cost. It adds regulation. So you're talking about the impact on the consumer, but it also impacts the entrepreneur trying to do
100%.
Something.
Yeah.
And I do need to point out for the McRib talk and now my defense of fast food here, because at least two of the doctors who are partners with my concierge doctor listen to this podcast. I have not had any fast food since the last doctor appointment. I don't even think I've had a bite of red meat in 3 weeks.
Oh my gosh.
I think I've had a bite, but not much.
David.
The longest I've gone in my whole life.
Why did we not lead the show with this?
Because I don't like talking about it. But now you're talking about all this fast food.
You look great,
rides.
By the way.
Well, I have a lot of room to go. I'm getting cholesterol down, getting thinner, getting healthier. And then I'll probably get hit by a car and die. That's the thing, honestly. Can we change subject?
Of course we can.
Don't you struggle with that issue where in the macro, we all know that the number one cause of death is heart-related and it's mostly behavioral, connected to genetics.
Yes.
We all know it.
Yep.
So diet and exercise in the macro leads to a healthier society.
That's right.
And in the micro, it's like stuff can just happen.
Yeah.
There are tons of healthy people that still get cardiac stuff.
Yeah.
And there are tons of people get hit by a car and things. And you're sort of like, I don't know, like, am I going to go to all this trouble?
Yeah.
And still have something else go wrong.
Well, there was in my youth, there was this famous guy who wrote a book. I think it was Jim Fix was his name, F-I-X-X. This is in the 70s. And my dad was a big distance runner. You know, well into his, I think, late 50s, probably early 60s. He was running marathons and 10Ks and that sort of thing. Hi, Dad. And Jim Fix was a household name in our house. I think it was called The Art of Running or something like that. He was one of the architects of the big running boom in America in the 70s when everybody was out there, as Will Ferrell says in Anchorman, jogging.
Yeah. And along with Phil Knight up in Oregon.
That's right. Yeah. When Nike takes off at this point. So running becomes highly popular. Jim Fix, famous, goes out for a run one morning, sits down on the curb to cool down, and drops dead of a heart attack at, like, you know, 52 or something. Not an old guy, really healthy, and just keeled over.
The analogy I heard once that helped me, though, because I think usually people bring up stuff like what I just brought up to justify continuing to live an unhealthy lifestyle.
Right.
And it is true that 50% of marriages end in divorce. And so the analogy is, so with that stat, does that mean you shouldn't try when you pick your mate?
Yeah.
Like, you still are going to do some due diligence and, like, kind of go through some premarital counseling or make sure you're aligned.
Divorce is still terrible.
Yeah, but, like, it can still happen at a high percentage chance. And also, I think you have to get to a point where you do diet and exercise, not because you're trying to extend life expectancy, but because it's quality of life.
Yes. Well,
that's the only reason I don't smoke.
The only reason
I don't smoke is because I think that when I'm older, I see those people that smoked their whole lifetime. Because, see, I think smoking's awesome.
Yeah.
I do. I haven't done it in a long time.
I haven't done it in a long time. Yeah.
But I used to do it, and people say, it's not cool. And I'm like, of course it's cool.
It's very cool.
And I tell my kids.
Yeah.
I go, you guys, this is the problem. Smoking is incredibly cool.
Yeah.
They're like, what are you saying, Dad? And I go, no, don't do it, but it is cool.
Yeah, sure.
It's just that it's unhealthy and long-term. It does bad things, and it's practically illegal. And I think a pack of cigarettes in the deep state now costs $38.
Oh, it's terrible.
But my point is that I do think it is better to feel good about yourself. And even on the exercise side, which I think is the least significant contributor to weight loss.
Yeah.
It is mental health for me.
Yeah.
Like, I have to run every day now or it screws up my day.
Yep.
And so I'm all for it. And my doctor is a good doctor. He's concerned about cholesterol and other things. And, you know, my dad had heart stuff. He died very young. Mm-hmm. You got to watch all that. But I just think, like, the fast food deal, it's kind of disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
But I like it.
Yeah.
And I don't. And then people go, like, moderation. I'm like, I don't do moderation. I don't do it.
Well,
what is that? What is
and that? I am at the other end of the spectrum. This is what makes it so much fun to have you as a friend. The kids at the office will tell you, and I think the median age of CPC staff now is like 25, and they laugh because my lunch every day is low-salt turkey slices, literally, from Trader Joe's. Take like a half a pound of that, and then eat a bag of spinach throughout the day.
That's kind of what I've been eating type of stuff lately. Jolene's been making me lunch and dinner every day. And it's definitely helping.
You look good.
But,
seriously, your color,
like,
everything.
I'll tell you, I remember I found out, like, not everyone spends $27 when they go through the drive-thru at a fast food restaurant. And I thought, like, someone's be like, oh, yeah, it was like $6.95. I'm like, oh, did you forget your credit card? And you only had $7 on you or something? And, like, they would just get, like, one Happy Meal or something. I'm like, well, I thought you were hungry.
What is your favorite fast food?
Well, Del Taco's
mine,
favorite.
Too.
Yeah, Del Taco's my favorite.
Yes.
But I do, like, people say McDonald's is so gross. I have the Jim Gaffigan approach. Like, no one asked you. Shut up.
Yeah.
It's not gross. It's delicious, which is why everyone likes it.
Yeah.
Taco Bell people like because they're poor and have no taste.
It's terrible.
It's terrible.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And it's convenient. It's sort of like CNN in the airport. It's like, if it's all that's there, then you got to...
I'll eat it.
But no, I don't think I've eaten Taco Bell in over 20 years.
Oh, well.
I'm pretty sure. I don't know. Maybe one time, but no, I don't eat it ever. McDonald's fries, I think, are delicious. And Del Taco, I like head to toe. But here is a challenge on fast food now. It is, the burgers have gotten really good at, like, the In-N-Outs and Five Guys and that. What do they call them? Smart Burgers or Super Burger or something?
Don't know. Oh, you mean Beyond Burgers, that kind of thing?
No, not that's a veggie burger.
Yeah, right.
No,
you're not talking about that stuff.
Dear God, what the hell is
I love those. I'm serious. You just...
Okay, we're done. Just close us out. Close us out. Bienvenidos. Will is no longer with us. Jeez.
Hey, can I blast through? These are so important.
Oh, yeah. We have plenty headlines. Of stories to go through.
Headlines.
California. I wonder if you are more mad about our football talk or our diet talk.
That's why they have a fast forward button on the podcast. California Assembly passes bill to become a refuge state for trans kids and their parents. This is part of your friendly neighborhood Wiener Watch.
Yeah, because California, compared to other states, it was pretty rough.
It was
for
brutal.
Transgenders.
Yeah, it was brutal.
You know, there were a lot of California transgenders trying to get out of California to get out to the South.
Yeah, this is such an awesome story.
Let me guess, is this Scott Wiener?
It is Scott Wiener.
Really?
It's part of the Wiener Watch. Yeah.
How did I know?
Well, so here's, you know, you and I have talked a lot about, like, you know, do you go after nut picking? But he is a nut, and he must be picked. This is a guy who just cannot keep his hands off your kids. It is absolutely amazing. No, I didn't mean it that way. I'm sorry. I'm not accusing him of pederasty. I'm accusing him of something, you know, that's equally bad, I think, really. In promoting this sort of thing, he is, I think, gotta know that he is helping destroy families. Because part of the bill would suggest, and I'm just saying this is in the penumbra, if you will, of the bill, is evidence that kids could actually determine their own transgender status without parental consent, leave a state outside of California, and come here, and the state would not cooperate with in-state authorities elsewhere or people representing the parents to turn the kid to send the kid back. This is in there, if not explicitly, certainly implied. Let me see if I can find the way Wiener put it was, California must stand with LGBTQ kids and their families, especially when they're under attack across the countries. And then he says, parents should never be separated from their kids or criminalized for simply allowing them to be who they are. Who they are, of course, is being driven now by state curriculum, including that adopted, David, right here where we are. You and I are in Newport Beach this morning in the Newport Mesa School District. This is a credit to Fox, man. They actually did a Public Records Act request and got hold of, and I think with some work from some parents who work with our parent union, it appears, and discovered that the
I think this was Chris Rufo.
Yeah, yes.
Who broke this, and then Fox published it.
I think you may be right that Rufo.
And Chris Rufo's breaking this all over the country.
Yeah.
If you're doing something dumb in a school district, Rufo's going to find you.
He's going to find you. So,
boy, is that guy an American hero or what?
He really is.
This is some of the best investigative journalism I've ever seen.
Yeah, and Abigail Schreier, who's written a lot about this sort of thing,
and
also California.
Rufo has not yet walked into it, like not gotten ahead of himself, gone too quickly and falsely identified or accused or labeled. He's really been solid.
Well, this was a textbook ordered by the Newport Mesa District called Comprehensive Health Skills for High School that claims there are 8 different gender identities, including androgynous bigender, BY, by the way, BY gender, bigender, gender nonconforming, gender questioning, non-binary, androsexual, polysexual, scoliosexual, which sounds
aren't you confusing gender identity and sexual
orientation? Sorry, I am.
Okay, so gender identity is where you're getting the non-binary, gender questioning,
correct,
gender nonconforming.
You're right. Thank you.
And I don't know. Now, you know what's interesting? There's no male or female.
Holy moly. I'll have to go back and reread. They've got the gender.
Oh, no. That's what they call cisgender?
Cis. That's
right. Is cis how you say it? Or
yes. Cis?
Kiss?
Cis. C-I-S.
Soft C. And then the I is I.
Yeah. Like cellophane. Cis.
Now, does everyone know that? I didn't know that.
Yes.
Cisgender.
Yeah. You hear this if you watch enough Netflix.
So having a gender identity that matches one's biological sex assigned at birth. So every single person in the world is cisgender and doesn't know it.
That's right.
Because you do indeed have a gender that matches your biological sex.
That's right.
Whether you say so or not.
That's
so
right.
Then there's these other gender identities that are just.
And sexual orientation.
But the sexual orientation is different. And this is where I'm really glad we get to talk about this.
Please.
Without a Scott Wiener article this time. Because those things always get a little too crude for me. Could you please tell me, if you're willing to, what is a scoliosexual?
No, brother, I just saw this morning when my staff started bombing me with, oh my gosh, have you seen this? You live right near here, don't you? Because we have staff all over the state. And when I read scoliosexual, the first thing I thought of was scoliosis, which, of course, is a spinal disorder.
But it's having romantic attraction to people who are non-binary.
Yeah, I don't.
No, that's scolio romantic. That's different than scolio sexual.
How about demisexual?
Oh, it's having sexual attraction for people who are non-binary. So that's another distinction they got between sexual and romantic, which is good.
That's nice.
Do you care about that non-binary person? Not at all, but I do want to have sex with them.
Yeah.
That's a sexual orientation.
That's right.
That's called scoliosexual. This is the reason we're going to win the culture war. This is so stupid.
Yeah, but you know, you listen to the...
No possible way you could send this to anybody you know, left, right, or moderate, who's in the Newport Mesa School District, and have them believe you that this is really in the curriculum of the school district.
Well, and that's what I wanted to point out, and you know, I'm trying to wrap this up quickly because we're running over time here, but there is a great piece by John Fensterwald of EdSource. That is just one of the best education reporting outlets ever. They are not, I would say they are very, very down the line, just really fair. They are very neutral reporters. And this piece by John Fensterwald, here's the headline, and it tells just about everything you need to know. California does little to ensure all kids read by third grade. It is a massive tour de force in which John, whose work I follow pretty closely, documents the fact that other states that are far poorer than California have made gigantic leaps over the last few years in reading by third grade. And the reason that's important is because most research shows that if you can't read by third grade, you can no longer learn. That reading by third grade is imperative for learning everything else: math, science, gender identity. Although I suppose you could just point at the gingerbread man proposed here in Newport Mesa. You see the pictures rather than have to read the words. But this study shows that, you know, again, what we already know, that California's kids can't read by third grade, then they fall dramatically behind other states after that, so that by the eighth grade, by 12th grade, California's literacy rate is among the worst in the nation. Mississippi is far better than California, far poorer, had far much farther to come, and is trashing California. So the reason I connect these stories, David, is that we've got all this stuff about gender identity and the complexities of, you know, critical race theory being taught in our schools, but the kids can't read. They can't do the basic thing. It's a lot like having cops say, well, we teach finger painting and we deliver muffin baskets, but, you know, crime is rampant. Or we should be allowed to beat the trash out. Go ahead. I want to hear this.
There's a thing called... And again, I'm taking this in the context you're talking about, that reading, writing, and arithmetic are being ignored. But I am pleased that demisexual is out there, which is developing sexual attraction only with a deep emotional bond.
Oh, wow. See, and I thought it was like love of Greek gods or something.
Polysexual is multiple. Why is that different than bisexual? Oh, because bi is only men and women,
right?
Where poly is men and women and others.
Oh, all the
I
others.
I can include non-binary genders. Look, I talked earlier about Paul foolishness of Greeks, and I just think this is what you get. This, the folly of this is the insanity of unbelief.
And I keep coming back to the Tower of Babel. You know, we think we're God. We think we can produce the perfect regulatory state that will yield a utopia, and then suddenly we are dumbstruck by our own language.
Yeah, but we went a few thousand years where I thought some of the worst stuff that could come out of that. Well, that's not true. Even in those thousands of years, there was a lot of oppression and totalitarianism and great inefficiency. But at least for thousands of years, they weren't caught up on scoliosexuality.
And we could treat people with scoliosis.
I just do not. When people say, like, are you just furious about this? Are you heartbroken? I don't take it serious. I just don't believe there's a person out there other than the bureaucrat who writes it who takes this stuff seriously. They have to. When the mics are off, the cameras are off, the public meeting is done, they have to sit back and think this is a joke.
From your lips to God's ears.
You think they believe this stuff?
I think there are true believers out there. I do think that a lot of our teachers, at least the ones I talk to, and these are not necessarily conservative. In fact, most of them are not conservative. They are anti-Trump, pro-Democrat, you know, they're self-described progressives who say the job of being a teacher today is complicated by parent pushback against bizarre stuff. And they wish they could just get back. This is not what they got into teaching for. It was, you know, like trying to manage parents. And school board officials, same thing, left and right. They say, like, you know, when the state overreaches, people get ticked. So I think wherever the state is starting to try to to regulate at this deep level, we are going to have real civil fights, uncivil fights, I should say. David, you got anything else here, buddy?
You have prepared well. We went through everything. We weren't cut off early.
I know. Thank you.
I have my next call in a full 18 minutes, so there's even a little margin, which is not like us.
Yeah.
And we're still in the studio again next week.
Excellent.
And then after that, I'll go back to New York.
Well, and I go to Germany, so I'm hoping that you and
when
I can...
When do you leave?
I leave Sunday, September the 11th.
Yeah, I go to D.C. on the 9th. So maybe next week we try to tape two episodes?
We could do that. Yeah. I would like it. I have the other one. Maybe we can go through the propositions because there's a lot of fun stuff in there. Maybe we can even get our friend John Fleischman in here if you'd like. And,
I like that.
And do it because he's got some really fascinating insight there.
He does.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have today. You can always find this podcast on the National Review website, but you know that. And you also know that it's easier for you and better for us if you just subscribe and rate and review the show wherever you do subscribe. That boosts our profile and helps others find us. Email us comments and story suggestions. Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Doc. You know who you are, Dr. Tony. You'll find our personal email addresses and other fun details in the show notes. You can follow us on Twitter at The Radio Free CA. On behalf of my friend and co-host David Bonson, we give thanks as ever to our session producers, Brian Tong and Glenn Hall, our researchers, Houston Reese, Sheridan Swanson, and Alex Kachatrian, and to all of our friends at National Review, but especially National Review's podcast producer, Sarah Schutte. Thanks also to Metalachi. I love Metalachi, the LA-based mariachi metal band for our music, La Revolución. Continúa en la semana próxima.